everyone. Welcome to the Blood Ties podcast. This time, it's, I'm afraid, just me, Geoffrey Wonsall, as my daughter's busy. But it's very nice to be with you. It's always wonderful to be with you, and a great treat. I thought I'd do two things. This podcast, I talk about some crime books and one case that I find very interesting. I'm not going to go into one case in detail. I'm just going to try and give you a flavour of what I think. But first of all, let's talk about books. As you know, one of the other things I do, apart from making true crime documentaries and making this podcast with Molly, is I'm the crime and thriller reviewer for the Daily Mail and have been for, more than 10 years. And it's always interesting because it's extraordinary how crime fiction apes crime fact. And indeed, crime fiction also feeds upon itself. I'm currently reading an extraordinary book called You Can Stay by a British woman called Elle Connell. And it really is inspired by Stephen King's marvellous 1987 horror thriller called Misery, in which a romantic novelist, Paul Sheldon, has a car accident in the snow and is taken in by a woman called Anne Wilkes, who claims to be his number one fan. But she then keeps him captive. It's a wonderful book, and it was a wonderful film with Kathy Bates as Anne Wilkes and James Caan as Paul Sheldon, the novelist. To this day, it sticks in my mind. I think I first saw it in Paris, of all unlikely places. I think I was waiting for a plane or about to go and get a plane back to London. And there it was. So I sat through it, riveted, on the Champs-Élysées. I'll never forget it. And indeed, the story lingers in the mind. But this is a particularly good, fresh take on it. It's not a romantic novelist this time. It's a soldier undergoing special forces training on Bodmin Moor in Cornwall when he's effectively taken prisoner by a woman who lives in a very isolated farm, farming sheep and keeping chickens and various other things. It's really interesting, and I'm going to be reviewing it in a week's time. But I thought I'd also mention one or two others which I thought you might like. I'm very fond of a book called Hope to Die, which came out recently by a wonderful writer called Cara Hunter. It's a detective inspector, Adam Fawley, who works in Oxford. Now, that's, as we all know, that's Inspector Morse territory. But in fact, Fawley is, I think, in many ways, even more interesting. He doesn't work alone so much, not just Lewis. Fawley has a whole team. And it's compelling. This book, Hope to Die, is the sixth in the Fawley series, which I heartily recommend. Fawley is interesting, complex. It starts out with a killing in an isolated farmhouse with a young man is killed with a shotgun, and the elderly couple claim that he was an intruder. But it gets more complex than that, I'm delighted to say. It turns out that the young man who's the intruder is the child of Camilla Rowan, the notorious chameleon girl, who is still serving life for the murder of her newborn son. The baby's body was never discovered, and Rowan has long claimed that she never harmed him. So begins an absolutely thrilling police procedural that turns at ever-increasing speed. And if you haven't ever sampled Adam Fawley, I do heartily recommend that you do. Also, one of the things I'm going to be doing in this series of podcasts leading up to Christmas is I'm going to be talking to one or two authors. And one of them is Cara Hunter, the author of Hope to Die. So I think it's worth hanging on and persevering with if you've got a moment. I thought I'd also mention a couple of other books, or a handful of other books. One I didn't review, although I think it's wonderful, is called Genesis by Chris Carter. And Carter I have a great deal of admiration for. I think this is his fifth or sixth book. He writes spectacularly well. And he has a wonderful protagonist called Robert Hunter. Hunter is called to a crime scene. In fact, the most vicious crime scene he's ever attended. And a body has been eviscerated. And a message is left inside the body by the killer. And it quickly develops into a series of killings with messages left inside all the bodies. I tell you why I didn't review it, because I thought it was too gruesome. But I'm perfectly happy to recommend it to the podcast listeners, because I think you've probably got perhaps a bit more of a stomach for this kind of story than maybe the ordinary reader of the Daily Mail. So I urge you to read it. It went straight into number one, and in fact, last week or the week before, it was still in the bestseller lists. Carter is very, very good. He's born in Brazil of Italian origin and studied psychology and criminal behaviour at the University of Michigan. He's also in the Michigan State District Attorney's criminal psychology team. He's interviewed and studied many criminals, including serial and multiple homicide offenders, but he now lives in London. Excellent, excellent book, and I heartily recommend it. The next one I'm going to mention is a novel by a really very famous novelist called Scott Turow, who originally, of course, leapt to fame with his first novel, Presumed Innocent. No one could forget Presumed Innocent. It was made into a film starring Harrison Ford, Greta Scacchi, a story of a DA, assistant DA, accused of murder of his brief mistress. And it turns out to be a most elaborate and elegant, elegant story. But the new book, which is called Suspect, has a very wonderful protagonist. It's written, believe it or not, in the first person as a woman. She's called Pinky. She's actually Clarice Pinky Granham. She is covered in tattoos, has a stud through her nose, and works as a private investigator for a defence attorney, a very good one called Rick Dudek. Dudek is hired to protect the reputation of the chief of police, a woman called Lucia Gomez, who is, we're talking about America, we're talking about Kendall County. And she's been chief of police, rather against the, typically male nature of the police force, and she's the boss. But she's then accused of sexual harassment of two of her detectives. Quite extraordinary. But Pinky, as a detective, the investigator for Rick, is drawn into this in an attempt to save the reputation of Lucia Gomez. It's complex, thrilling, in many ways fascinating. And I couldn't put it down. I absolutely couldn't. And I shall certainly be reviewing it next week. It is really very, very good indeed. And I think for Turow, it's a return to form. He's an excellent, excellent novelist. And this is a book not to be forgotten or overlooked. Well, I've also recently read the latest Cormoran Strike novel, The Ink Black Heart, written by J.K. Rowling under the pseudonym of Robert Galbraith. It's massive. It's 1,000 pages long, and it's all about trolling. And as I'm sure many of you know, Rowling has been trolled for her views on gender. And a lot of the passion she feels about that comes out. It underlines just what a fine crime writer she's become. This is the sixth of the crime of the Cormoran Strike series. It's the murder of the creator of an online cartoon called The Ink Black Heart, who has been trolled by a sinister figure known only as Anomy. But it opens really quite touchingly with a birthday party for Strike's partner, Robin Ellicott, at the Ritz Hotel, and underlines how much they feel for one another. And so it's not terror from day one. And if you persevere with it, it really is enveloping. It's compulsive in ways. And I think it, if anyone doubted it, I mean, Rowling's talents as a storyteller are well known to all of us, but if you actually look at it, my goodness me. Yes, it may be long, but it's thrilling. And another one, if you've got the moment, or wait for it to come out in paperback. Mind you, it'll be a jolly big paperback. The hardback's big enough, crikey. But it is worth it. And Strike is still a very interesting creation. You know, Iraq war veteran, got a prosthetic leg, is famously grumpy in this funny little office in German, in Denmark Street, Tin Pan Alley as it's known in London. But my goodness me, it really does work in a most formidable way. And one last book to draw your attention to. No one could not admire Geoffrey Archer. I mean, you may disagree with him, you may be horrified by him, but my goodness me, he can tell a story. And he's written one of his series of books about a very clever detective chief inspector called William Warwick. And this time, Warwick finds himself caught up in protecting what is clearly a sort of Lady Diana figure, a very famous royal. And my goodness, I mean, he is, I think I've called him this before, he really is a master of the page turner. It's very strong. It's, yes, it lacks some nuance, but my goodness, it moves at pace. And there is a compellingness to it that you think, crikey, I'm pretty gripped with that. And he doesn't let you down. And again, if you wait for it to get into your local library or wait for the paperback, it's called Next in Line, and it is by Geoffrey Archer. So those are a few suggestions. I'd like to make perhaps some suggestions about one or two television shows I've been watching. I watch a lot of crime, and I watch a lot of true crime. And I've been watching a series on Netflix, three series called I Am a Killer, where, of course, you can interview convicted killers in America, but you couldn't do that in England. So they're all, of course, American cases because you can't get access in this country. And they're all, they have all the protagonists, each episode about a different killing, a different killer. They are, you get the detective, you get the killer, you get the relatives of the victims. They are spectacularly good. And I do, you know, easy to catch on Netflix if you happen to have Netflix. I'm really mostly talking about shows that are available on streaming, because Molly and I have a lot of listeners around the world, so they haven't always got, you know, UK terrestrial channels. So I think it's important that I recommend things that you can get if you're not happen to be resident in the United Kingdom. It also has a sort of sequel called I Am a Killer Released, which is two episodes, about a killer who was indeed released. I won't give away the ending or anything like that. That would be not right. But believe me, it's hypnotically good. And so I urge you to have a look if you get a moment. And if you've got Netflix, that is, of course. But something that's not on Netflix but is on Amazon Prime is a wonderful fictional series called The Sinner, about a cop played by Bill Pullman, who is idiosyncratic, rather strange, certainly old. He's got a beard and he looks a bit haggard. And it's a story about him not being convinced in the first series of eight that a woman is guilty when everybody seems to think she is. It was originally played by, and indeed the series was created by, an actress called Jennifer Beale. And she stars in the first series. And she indeed executive produces the following three series, so there are four altogether. Although she doesn't appear in the next three, Pullman does. And Pullman increasingly dominates the show. It is an absolutely exquisite example of very low-key, not showy, very gentle acting of the finest kind. So I don't know. It's quite a commitment, because I watched all 32 episodes, four series of eight, and you know, it's a bit of a sit, but goodness me, they are well worth it. And I certainly recommend it. Well, I'm not recommending the obvious things, because you were all very clever at this. There's a marvellous series on Netflix called Ozark, about a crime family. There's a wonderful series on Netflix, two series, in fact, called Mindhunter, which Molly and I have talked about on this show before. And there's also on Amazon, Bosch Legacy. Now, Harry Bosch, as those of you familiar with the American writer Michael Connelly will know, is a Los Angeles detective who finally, in this series — there have been a series of Bosch films but and Bosch series on Amazon, but this is one after he's retired, and his daughter, much-loved daughter, becomes a policewoman in uniform. Gosh, again, one of those shows to really take your breath away. And I was gripped from the beginning. I really like the show. I really like the performances. I really like the stories. And again, I thought, well, I'd like to share that with you, those thoughts with you, because there is something compelling. And Bosch is a wonderfully compelling character. I mean, the other thing that Michael Connelly wrote was a wonderful book called The Lincoln Lawyer, which was made into a movie with Matthew McConaughey, a very good one, and then has become a series developed from the book and the television of episodes on Netflix. So those are another couple of things that, in a way, sort of, if you're interested in crime and you like that sort of thing, they're all certainly worth your while. They are engrossing, beautifully done, very interesting, and not in the slightest bit dull. They are nuanced, they are constantly taking you in new directions and in different ways. It's a masterclass in doing this sort of thing. And all of them, I believe — I mean, you can always turn them off, but I think they'll always keep you fascinated. Well, as you know, I mean, among many other things I do, I make true crime documentaries. And just a new series of Britain's Most Evil Killers and the World's Most Evil Killers, in which I played a part in all 20 episodes. This is the seventh series. I've done 140 episodes, believe it or not, in the last few years. And the first of the new series happened this week. It involved a British killer called Lewis Daines. And Daines groomed young men. He was a computer freak and eventually killed a man called Breck Badnock, a young man, in the most brutal way. And what's interesting about it, and I've had a lot of reactions to this one, the family of someone once called Danes the baby-faced killer, but the family of, I'm so sorry, I've got the name of his victim wrong, Breck Badnar. He was born in 1999, and Danes was born in 1995. Breck's triplet siblings, were born in 2001. It was a horrible crime, in which the irony was that Breck had never met Lewis Danes until the day of his death. Their relationship had been conducted entirely online. Lewis Danes was a master manipulator, even though he was very young, master manipulator of young men. And he formed little special groups, and all through, of course, technology. And in the end, tempted Breck to visit him. And that was the first and last time that Breck actually met Lewis Danes. And Lewis Danes, to be fair, I mean, clearly groomed this young man, who was obviously suggestible, online, and persuaded him to come and visit him, and indeed paid for his taxi. But after ordering them both pizzas, he decided to kill the young man in the most brutal manner. And I won't go into all the details because they're simply too horrible. But it underlines, and I think I always like stories that underline moral issues. And the issue it underlines is you must be very cautious about falling for people who are not what they seem. And here, I mean, Danes pretended to be all sorts of things online to this group of followers. You know, he was a millionaire. He was living in Dubai. He was the most extraordinary panoply of lies. Terrible, terrible lies. And it's exceptional case. And he killed the young man when he was just 15. What it underlines is the dangers of online grooming. And indeed, Breck Badnar's mother created a website, a charity, in his name, to draw attention to the dangers of online grooming. And again, I think that's something that all of us have got to be conscious of. I don't have a young children, but I do have two granddaughters. And you can never be entirely sure exactly whom they're contacting and whom they're meeting online. It's like there are certain cases, aren't there, that somehow capture the public imagination. And this is certainly one. I mean, I had a note from a man I happened to know. I knew the prosecutor in this particular case, a wonderful man called Richard Whittam. Used to be senior Treasury counsel. Now KC, of course, in the wake of the accession of King Charles III. And Richard prosecuted Lewis Danes. It's a really interesting, if chilling, case. And another of those times when you wonder what exactly is going on here. How did Danes get to be that character? How did he come up with the idea of grooming other young men online? He was a very much a loner. He said, by way of explanation, he was to say that at one point, I felt abandoned by both my parents. But hang on, that doesn't explain how he gets to be a manipulator. And also, it has to be said, potentially a paedophile. I mean, in 2011, at the age of 16, Danes was accused of rape by a boy of 14. But was not no charges were brought, but the allegations lay on file and on the police national computer. But Danes was not content with that. He went on to manipulate everyone he could find. And one person who fell into his spider's web was Breck Badnar. It's one of those ones that does send a chill down my spine. You can look it up online. It's on Sky Crime at the moment, a first of the seventh series of Britain's Most Evil Killers. And it premiered in England on the 13th of September. But I've made another 19 in that series, so there are many more to come. I've also been making a series for Channel 5 in England. But again, I don't want to annoy our Mollies and my listeners in Australia or in America, or indeed in Sweden, or indeed the Philippines, by referring to shows they won't be able to see. These are about high security prisons in the United Kingdom. But they're very interesting. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing to do. And, well, I've got all sorts of other possibilities coming up, I think. I'm very lucky to be as busy as I am. It's slightly mystifying at my age, but nevertheless, I'm incredibly grateful. And I do find it very interesting. I mean, I've had several people recently say to me or write to me or email me, usually through my website. So if you Google Jeffrey Wonsall, you'll find me and my email connections, saying I'm very soothing. I find that odd, really, but it's very, very flattering. Considering I'm talking about such terrible things, to be regarded as soothing is slightly, how can I put it, idiosyncratic. But never mind, one mustn't complain. Anyway, I do hope that this podcast, this one without Molly, but believe me, there'll be plenty with Molly as well. So sometimes you have to put up with just me, and then sometimes you'll have Molly as well. And then sometimes I'll do an interview with an author, or indeed, I'm hoping to some policemen as well. So it's kind of a slight alteration of the format, but not really a radical one. We're still talking about true crime. We're still primarily a father and daughter. And we're still talking about real life cases, which is what I'm doing today. So do stay with us if you possibly can. I must, obviously, as usual, as Molly would always do, were she here with me, I must thank our producer, Sam Brain, my son, Dan, Molly's brother, who did the music, George, who drew the cartoon of us, and indeed Audio Boom for hosting us. But most of all, I'd like to thank all of you for taking the trouble to listen. I very, very much hope you enjoy it. I really, really do. And I do enjoy doing it. I think I've said before that I regard this podcast as my greatest creation, in spite of the books and the television documentaries and all the rest of it. I do. I'm immensely proud of this podcast, and I'm immensely grateful to you all for listening. So I hope you enjoyed something slightly different. And as I say often at the end, please remember, bad things happen to good people. So for goodness sake, please, please, please be careful out there.